Westwood One presents Two Chairs and a Microphone.
Checking 1, 2.
Here's your host, Paul Mercurio.
Hey, folks, welcome to the podcast. I can't thank you guys enough for giving me reviews. They're looking great. Please keep sending them and tell your friends to send some out. Always helps to have some nice words on iTunes. Real simple. Just go there. And don't forget, tell your friends, subscribe to my podcast. It's free. What's better than that? Tour dates. I'm going to be this weekend, Philadelphia. Very excited at the Punchline. Punchline Comedy Club, Philadelphia. Always a great time there. March 2nd to the 4th. 5 shows, March 2nd to the 4th. March 9th to the 11th. Just put this on the books. I'm going to be at Levity Live Comedy Club in Nyack, New York. That's just outside of New York City. Beautiful, beautiful venue. Huge. Crowds out there can be great. So come on out. It's going to be a fun time. March 9th to the 11th. March 23rd to the 26th, I'm going to be at the Comic Strip Comedy Club in Edmonton, Canada. Yes, Edmonton, I go everywhere. People need me everywhere. March 29th to April 1st, I'm in San Francisco at the Punchline there. And I've been there a bunch of times and always have a blast. All my tour dates are on my website, paulmercurio.com. And please, please, go give us a review. Hope to see you guys out on the road. And enjoy Zach Sang.
Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm good. Radio show host of his own show, the Zach Sang Show on Westwood One Radio. I did your show as a guest. You were very cool. You have a great story of how you got started in this. And
you were phenomenal coming on, so I thank you for taking the time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely,
you were a really cool guy.
Thank you. Well, you are, too. We really hit it off. And it was all the way across the coast there. I was in New York. You were here. We were just talking about the Pope. You love the new Pope.
I am loving Young Pope on HBO. Pope. Do I sound okay in this? Do you think I sound weird over there?
No, you sound great.
Okay, good.
You sound like a 13-year-old boy, but you're not. You're like in your 20s.
23. 10 years older.
There you go.
But I'll take 13. Like, if I can sound like I'm 13 for quite some time, I'm okay.
Oh, listen, I know. Are you kidding?
Yeah, right? It looks and sound. You want both now. You can't just have one without the other.
I always look, especially when I was younger, young for my age, and I would get carded when I was like 20. Out of 24, 25, I was still getting carded. And I'm like, I'm okay with that. You know?
Yeah, you want that.
Yeah, exactly.
You want to be reminded that, like, you haven't crossed over yet.
Yes,
you know?
Exactly. Like, it's not the end of your life, or the beginning of the end of your life,
yes.
Right? So what about the new Pope do you like?
I'm liking the young Pope. I like Jude Law. I like Sally Field. I think it's a really great premise. Mm. I love anything on television right now, like House of Cards style.
Oh, yeah.
If you can show me how the sausage is made, whether it's real or not, I don't really give a shit.
Yeah.
You know, I want to be a part of it. Can I curse? Is that okay?
No, you can do whatever you want.
I want to see how it works.
Yeah.
And I want to be brought into that world.
Of, like, sort of what goes on within
politics.
Right.
West Wing. I've watched that series twice.
Right.
Even Scandal. Like, I'll go as low as a Shonda Rhimes joint. But I love House of Cards. And the young Pope is that type of style, but for the Catholic Church.
Right.
And you learn a lot.
And I love House of Cards. But I think the key to it is drawing up characters that are interesting and have levels and are sort of, you know,
Layers
and kind of, you know, sort of just have a story to tell while they're telling a different story, you know? And I think that to me, when I saw the first ad for it, I'm like, Ike, the young Pope, is this, I don't know if it was a parody or a comedy in a way, because it seemed like, we'll put Jude Law in a Pope outfit.
He looks ridiculous.
He does.
And he's wearing like the Pope fedora, like he should be walking down a GQ runway or something.
Didn't you think it was potentially a comedy?
Yes, and by the way, like, Jude Law is a good-looking dude.
Oh, my God.
He plays, you know, that's a hot Pope.
Yeah, exactly.
When is the world going to get a Pope that looks like that?
Exactly.
That's the question we should really be asking. I like the guy right now talking, you know, saying that we all need to be hyper-aware of Trump and all this kind of stuff. I like him, Benedict.
We all know the hunching Pope, you know, in the 60s, 70s with white hair and maybe balding.
I want something
new.
Done.
Been there, done that.
That's it.
We need a young, this is it, the young
Let's
Pope.
Spice it up.
So it's a social media world.
Yes.
You got to have a guy, a Pope, who's on social media.
And, you know, Benedict is cool, but he's not, nobody wants to have sex with him.
No.
Right?
Well, I do.
Questions now, Paul. Questions.
Boy, I opened up a can of worms.
Yeah.
You're good, man. You got me to admit something on my own show.
Is it a dude thing for you, or is it an old guy thing for you?
Well,
those are the questions I have now.
He's a fatherly figure, and I think that gives me comfort, you know, to spoon with a man who reminds me of my dad.
Just your head right in the middle of his nice man breasts.
Oh, my God. Right after I shaved his back, it's the best.
Does he serve you warm milk?
Oh, he serves me, all right.
Yeah. Great.
So, Zach has an amazing story. You were a bagging groceries. You were 14 in Wayne, New Jersey.
Wow,
and
you know.
Well, I did a little.
Thank you.
That's the least I can do if
that
you're going to be nice enough to take time out of your middle school gig to come over here. You're 14-year-old. You look how young you are.
I've cut lunch for you, asshole. Okay?
Oh, you didn't eat?
No, I mean, I cut high school lunch. I'm kidding. By the way, like, we got to get into your food habits. I've watched you eat around the hallways here because we share a building. That's how.
Yeah, we're both on the same network. Yes. I have a podcast, you have a radio show, and we're all part of the Westwood One Cumulus family.
And you're over here now, and I've been seeing you in the hallway. Like, you eat peanuts. You're big on, like, you snack a lot.
Yes.
And then I saw you at the place across the street. What'd you get to eat at the little Jerry's Hut?
I've been eating one meal a day. I'm here for a week from New York, and I'm running around, and I've been eating on average about a meal a day with granola bars thrown in between. I got a turkey wrap over there.
Okay.
And then I woofed that down in 5 minutes. And then I got a couple things of peanuts because I knew I was going to be hungry later. So I popped those to kind of sustain me. Really? I like almonds too.
Is this like a diet thing? Are you poor? What is it?
Well, I am poor. but, you know, I've been able to do well on the food end because I go through dumpsters and I get food out of the dumpsters.
Obviously.
Or, you know, a lot of times homeless people, they'll sleep.
Yes.
I'll take their food while they're sleeping.
Wow.
When, you know, because I don't care. I don't have any morals. And
the homeless people give to you.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how you know you've reached a new level. Exactly. When the homeless man shares with you.
The Paul Mercurio story. When did you know you hit your low point? When I was stealing from homeless people. I thought I need to go into analysis. I like my candy and all that other stuff, but I try to kind of balance it with like
good.
But when you're on the road, it's a little tricky.
Yeah.
But I had a nice egg sandwich today. It was very lovely.
That's nice.
Because I haven't had a hot meal in 4 days.
But you know what? What?
Yeah.
You have no like yearning for like late night ice cream?
Yeah,
like,
but where am I going to... First of all, I'm driving around in Ubers here. I don't have a car.
Okay.
So that's the only downside to Ubering in L.A. Mm-hmm. for an extended period of time. Otherwise, it's fantastic. Like, if I want to... I was dying. I had to go from Culver City, this studio, out to Pasadena to interview with Dr. Drew for my podcast.
Yeah. You went to Dr. Drew in Pasadena?
Yeah.
Do you know he's right across the street?
No, I know, but he wasn't available when I was here. I know.
What is he doing?
I know. He's being an asshole is what
That's
he is.
That's it.
And that ride out was an hour and a half, and all I had was a granola bar, and I did not have time. And I can't ask the guy to swing through a McDonald's drive-thru.
You got to.
Can you do that with Uber?
Yes. You got to be comfortable with the Uber guy.
Will he do that for you?
Yes. If you ask nicely.
Do I have to tip him?
Well, maybe you offer to get him something. If you're going to run to the Del Taco drive-thru, you want something.
I didn't think of that.
I've done that in the past. I've done that a couple times. Like when I'm drunk and it's time to go home and like I need something to eat. Yo, dude, Del Taco, In-N-Out, let's go together. Sometimes they want to go. Usually they say yes. Not all the time do they want things. Mm. But if I could like throw an extra dollar if you're using Lyft to tip them, that's not bad.
I've actually been eating a lot of Honey Nut Cheerios while I'm here because the people I'm staying with that's the only cereal.
Are you a fetus? Like, are you a 3-year-old baby?
I am.
Do you pack them in your Ziploc?
Is there a woman here I could breastfeed just for a minute?
Pope Benedict is your father. You're looking for a woman to suck on her tits and you eat Cheerios on the daily.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Cheerios and peanuts.
By the way, all while this is happening, he's still stealing from homeless people.
Exactly.
Okay. Don't forget that.
Oh, I have a lovely rotten banana that I got from a homeless guy. I'll share it with you later.
Thank you. I love myself a nice big brown banana.
What are your eating habits? You're thin. You're in good shape.
I'm not thin. Not in good shape. I eat cookie butter from Trader Joe's out of the jar.
Nice.
I cannot have only a scoop of Ben and Jerry's ice cream. I must eat the entire thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I go on starving
Their
periods.
Their caramel salt thing with the
core?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're delicious.
I was on the road in Minnesota and the manager of the comedy club turned me on to it. Holy shit.
Dude, it's ice cream and like all the caramel you could want and you just pick at it. It's like you're on a mission.
Exactly. And someone that weekend gave me a bottle of champagne who saw me and liked me. So we were eating champagne and we were drinking champagne and eating ice cream.
Was this
weekend.
A lover? Yeah. They liked you.
This is Pope Benedict. He came to Minnesota to see me. That's how much he's into me.
Wow. Wow.
He came, yeah.
He didn't even come on Pope Force One or anything
no,
like that.
No, he just
kinda, low key.
He did Southwest because they don't charge for checked bags.
That's a huge
and
deal.
And the Pope likes to save money.
He has a white suitcase. He needs to live the life of the poor.
No, his suitcase is in the shape of a mitre. It's that. And so you're like a single guy in LA. You just kind of junk food around or what?
I junk food around. I eat whatever I want. I eat, I go out to eat a lot. That's a bad thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it's so easy in a city like this. There's a restaurant every other door and there's
and
so many places.
And the food is so good.
Yeah.
It's always different and you can keep it unique.
Yeah.
You know? You can always keep it unique.
Mm.
But yeah, nothing crazy. I snack a lot, but I also like will starve myself.
Mm.
Like I'll go like what you do, one meal a day, and that's it, or like one thing a day, and then like I'll drop some weight because I'm still 23. I can drop and gain weight pretty quickly.
Right.
So I ebbs and flows.
Yeah. Do you? So this show that you have is fantastic. You obviously have a great personality.
Oh, thanks, man.
And the face for radio.
That's right.
And do you? You're 14. You're in Wayne, New Jersey, and you start. Did you have an interest in radio before that? Because you really kind of started as an intern, right? Yeah. In radio?
My obsession with broadcast started with like local news and then it moved over to Al Roker.
Mm-hmm.
When I was like 6, 7, I was obsessed with Al Roker. I'd watch everything he did. I had to watch the Today Show every day.
Why? Because he would make you laugh?
Well, I just love the fact that like he can give you information and make you laugh in the same break. Right? Uh-huh. Like in a couple minutes from each other, like even outside of Al, like Matt Lauer could be delivering hard news and then the next time he's dressed up as Batman rappelling off the side of 30 Rock.
Right.
Like I just love the idea that the two were matched in one show.
Right.
So my obsession with broadcast started there. And then as I was getting older, I was always a worker. I had a job since I was 9, $5 a day at the deli. I turned that into like my love for
what
music.
What did your parents do?
Oh, my parent, a social worker.
Oh, okay.
My mom's a social worker. My dad did mortgages. Uh-huh. Before he did mortgages, he sold furniture.
Oh, I grew up in a furniture store.
Really?
I used to sell furniture.
Which one?
Up in Rhode Island, Providence, Rhode Island, Cam, small family furniture business. Yeah.
My dad was a Levitt's guy.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
If you remember that from back in the day.
Yeah. There's a get it at Levitt's, something like that, right? Isn't that how the song went? There was a jingle.
There was a jingle.
I know, I'm serious.
I mean, I was like a fetus then.
Yeah.
And I remember my dad, like, I remember my dad going back and forth from Levitt's and he would take me in sometimes and I would like run around the place and I'd make the couches my own. But that has nothing. My radio obsession started with Al Roker. Then I started a party DJ company when I was 11, 12, and 13. Started with my friend.
Wow.
We would party DJ all of the Catholic school dances and the graduations in my town.
And you saved up money to buy the equipment to do this?
Okay, so my friend's dad was rich. He had a company called, do you remember Brioschi? It was like, you're Italian, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was, Alka-Seltzer, and then there was Brioschi.
Oh, I know, yeah.
In a blue tub.
Yeah.
And it looked like little tiny little, like sea creatures in there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was weird.
Yeah.
Like you could crush it up and like Coke.
Yeah.
it was in the blue tub.
Right.
And he had money, so his dad...
His dad was Brioschi?
Yeah, the family created Brioschi.
Wow. So and that's like an anti... Like you put it in, you mix it with
Pepto-Bismol,
water.
Pepto-Bismol,
and it
Alka.
Settles your stomach.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think it's fizz, fizz.
Oh, what a relief it is.
Yes.
We're just going to do jingles
that's it.
From the 80s and 90s, everybody.
So his dad was rich, and he invested in the DJ company, so he got us two speakers and a mixer. Nothing crazy.
Yeah.
The investment was $300.
Yeah.
But it gave us the tools to like really win, and we were able to pay him back because I was getting $150 a gig.
Wow.
I would negotiate all of it, and I'd curate the playlist. My best friend Nick would handle all the technology.
Wow.
So
that's great.
Yeah, so
you're so entrepreneurial at that age.
Oh, thanks.
Where did that come from? Was that your parent?
He wasn't, you know, I wish my dad was entrepreneurial. I think I'd be in a different position in life if he was entrepreneurial. I think it came from like seeing my parents like have a rough life.
Struggle,
you know?
Financially. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have brothers and sisters?
I have a sister.
Older, younger?
Younger.
Mm-hmm.
My parents always struggled financially. It was always hard to get by, whether it was, you know, they always wanted to keep us in Catholic school though, but it always caused more drama than it was worth because Catholic school costs money and Catholics like money.
Yes.
Pope Benedict needs to fly around somehow.
Listen, go, yeah, come see me and all
that's
that.
It.
I remember being a kid and they would go around three times with the donation basket within a mass. I grew up Catholic.
Disgusting a little bit.
You grew up Catholic?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Church
and,
every day. So
yeah. Well, just look at how gilded it is. It's ridiculous. You sit in there and go, is it really necessary for this thing to be this crazy? Like,
no.
Right.
And I used to go, well, because it was so bad. I remember growing up and like the teachers, because the Catholic school, there was only 80 kids in my school and the teachers would get so involved. So the teachers would know that my parents were having trouble paying the bills and they would bring it up to me. And I remember getting up in class
one
day.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, what would they say? Hey, kid. You got any money on you?
Well, they
shake you down?
They'd bring up the fact that my mom was like, wasn't able to pay. By the way, my parents were divorced at this time too. So that was a whole layer of difficulty that the church and the Catholic school was not down for at all.
Right.
It was really, it was toxic. And I remember getting up in eighth grade and looking at Miss Fury in the face and going, you know what? Jesus wouldn't want us to pay for this anyway. He'd want to teach us for free. It's the truth. He doesn't want our money.
What did you say when you said that?
She had no rebuttal, and then she asked me to leave.
Wow.
Yeah, I got suspended and
expelled
a couple times.
I can't believe the teacher. What kind of comment would the teacher make to you?
It was abuse. I wasn't able to read. I couldn't read until I was 10 years old, and my teachers would abuse me.
Were you dyslexic?
I was dyslexic, and they had no idea how to really like work with me. Mm. I just really like look at a page, and I wasn't able to read. Now I can cold read like a motherfucker, but back then I couldn't. But that really affected them, and that affected their perception of me. So it was like a combination of things. My mom couldn't pay. She was a single mom. My dad was only selling furniture. My parents were divorced. I couldn't read. I had a lot of, like, I had ADHD growing up, so I was a rambunctious kid. Like, I was never
easy. Well, you're still pretty animated. Do you still have that? Do you take anything for it?
I don't take anything for it. You want to be honest? Like, marijuana in certain situations help in replace of Adderall. Mm-hmm. And Adderall to me was just not, I was on it for years, 9 years.
Mm. Hand me the bong, by the way.
Yeah.
What did it do to you, Adderall?
Adderall, it got to a certain point where it was changing my personality. And
in what way? Sort of making you more dour and down?
It was making me more intense. And it was harder for me to work with the people around me.
Because I thought it was supposed to do the opposite and sort of level you out? No?
That's what I was hoping, but it made me too focused. Because as I would progress in age and as I got rid of the school stuff and was able to hone in my focus, Adderall wasn't necessary.
Oh, okay.
But now, I mean, the right sativa strain could really change one's life. Hmm. Seriously, because there's none of the terrible effects that Adderall has. I mean, from diet to, you know, mood changes and instability and depression. I mean, it could be a really toxic thing.
Yeah. And so you're not that combination, that toxic combination of sort of that Catholic school experience, your parents being divorced, struggling with money. How did that sort of shape you at that point? And then does that carry over to today?
Yeah. It definitely did, because I never wanted to be in that situation. I never wanted to be
in
that situation.
So that's the reason you were hustling and always working.
And finding something that worked and something that I loved. And I saw my parents be miserable. So it was like adding insult to injury. My mom's been a social worker in Paterson, New Jersey. One of the worst places in New Jersey, like next to Newark, you know, it's up there on the list. Yeah. Fetty Wap is from there. The guy lost an eye there, okay?
She's still looking for it.
They haven't found it. 33 years, she's been a social worker, dedicating her life to homeless people, single moms who are on the street with their kids. That's a taxing, emotionally hard gig.
Absolutely.
And it took such a strain on my mom, and I saw that, and I was like, I can't be a part of that. And the fact that she gives her all to something and she's still making nothing, it's ridiculous. Mm. So that was really a big motivation to find what I was passionate about and to capitalize on the things that were around me that I loved, like Al Roker and being obsessed with radio and music. Like, it was all those things that kind of, like, added up into, like, I guess what makes me today.
And what was it about radio that connected for you?
Audio. And the fact that I could be curious and talk to so many people.
Yeah.
It was a pure conversation medium.
That's why I love doing my podcast,
It's the best.
Yeah.
Because everybody has a story.
Right, absolutely.
Every human being, no matter who they are, has a past, present, and a future. Mm. Right? There's layers to everyone. And if you give somebody, anybody, a couple minutes, you can bring that out in them.
Oh, sure. And it could be, you know, I do stand-up and I talk to people in the audience sometimes. And then people come up to me and go, were those plants? I go, no. Well, the conversation like was interesting and it really worked out. And I go, everybody has a story. A plumber has a story.
That's
a CEO has a story. A social worker. Everybody has, we don't have perfect lives. We don't have these sort of humdrum. Everybody's got drama and issues and all of that.
And those are the through lines that connect us as humanity.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And there's things that connect you and I here to a 13-year-old girl in Burlington, Vermont.
Right.
And that 13-year-old girl in Burlington, Vermont is connected to a 65-year-old woman in San Luis Obispo.
Right.
You know, and that woman's connected to somebody in Houston. There's through lines that connect us as people.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I've worked on The Daily Show, and our demo was always like,
17-year-olds and 80-year-olds. Yeah. Like, and they were all relating to the material in the same way. So this, I never subscribed to the idea that, well, you know, young people and old people can't see eye to eye and any of that
they
nonsense.
Can.
Oh, yeah.
On a lot of things.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
A lot of things.
So you're, so college for you?
I didn't go.
Yeah. Well, just... Why?
You know, I tried to go. So, like, my timeline real quick was start a radio show from my bedroom at 14. At 16, I got out of my bedroom and I went to a company called Goom Radio. It's this online radio company.
Goon?
Goom. Yeah. Goom. Mm-hmm. And it was run by a French radio company and all these big radio executives. It was great.
Right.
Did that for 2.5 years. I started and ran the second largest teen radio station next to Radio Disney. After that, it was right around time for me to leave high school and go into college. I decided that I wanted to take a year off, right? Wanted to just focus.
You mean to kind of focus on what
radio.
You wanted to do?
Oh. Yeah, because I had been doing radio while attending high school, and it was
hard.
When
you say doing radio, were you on air?
I was on air fully. So yeah. I was running the radio station, hosting the show, and booking all the guests. After doing radio from my bedroom, that was like a solo gig. That was just me, a microphone, and my computer, and technology was amazing. Mm. You know, back then, YouTube was just becoming a thing. Nobody was really streaming radio.
Right.
Podcast was just really starting.
Yeah. And what year is this?
2008, 2009, maybe a little bit, probably earlier. Yeah, 2007 to 2008.
Okay.
So it was a different world. So I was doing that from there. Then I moved to this other company where I had like resources. I had like a team and I could work with people.
So what was it when you were so young that this guy trusted you to run a station and be, well, how was, you must have been very secure to be able to go in and convince a guy at 16 that you could do all this and have your own show. What do you think he saw in you?
I think I had proved myself from my bedroom. I had made headlines with my interviews, and I had realized a niche that worked.
How were you getting your interviews, and who were you interviewing at the time?
My base was Disney Channel stars, Nickelodeon stars, and whatever social influencers were peeking their heads up from the YouTube world.
And how were you getting the actual bookings?
Booking them myself.
Just calling up?
My parents at the time, for some reason, had a free trial to IMDb Pro. Mm. And IMDb Pro gives you publicity, contacts, agents, and managers. Mm. So I was able to log on there, and I would send emails. Like, I would send...
So, but nothing against you, but, you know, if you're on TV, even the Disney Channel, whatever, you know, you're a significant personality.
Why speak to me?
Why speak to you... And what did you say in the email to get them to say yes?
I was strategic. I'd go after kids that were just starting out on Disney Channel shows. Kids that who knew what they could turn into, you know?
So they needed any press.
Anything. Right. They would take
it.
They
didn't go after the big names
anywhere.
On the show, yeah.
Never.
Yeah.
Like I wouldn't be going after Miley Cyrus. I'd be going after like Debbie Ryan or Mitchell Musso or Emily Osment. You don't know these names, but they're all like, you know, B's and C's and not the A's.
Someone even just did a couple of guest stars or whatever.
Yeah, it was whoever was down because I needed to do, I casted a wide net and whoever was able to work for me, worked for me.
Mm-hmm.
Once I got a few, like the publicity and the people liked the interview and a lot of the stars, once they realized my age and they realized how great the interview was and how well it flowed, they wanted to keep doing it.
And the publicists got convinced and then they start to give you access to the bigger names.
Yes, because there's a select few publicity companies who pretty much run everybody.
Yeah.
And at the moment, I was like targeting all the ones who did all the Disney Channel stars.
Right.
So, you know, if I got one from Shannon Barr publicity, I knew that she had a roster of 25 others.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's how the fan base would grow because they would tweet about the interviews and people would see it and click on it. And the interviews were my thing. Like, that was the base. And at the time, I remember I started a relationship with Just Jared Jr. and some of the teen magazines because they started running my interviews. They would take them and like put the link up or whatever. I go into my first real radio job interview. I have a manila folder and in it, it's a stack maybe 3 or 4 inches high. And that's every press clipping I had acquired from every different site with every different interview I had done over the last 2 years. Mm. And in that was everything from, you know, J14 Magazine to the New York Post to Just Jared Jr.
Mm-hmm.
So I added like interesting credibility that wasn't necessarily music at the time, but it was content. Mm. And that's what this radio company needed to break through because traditional radio, they do music, 12 songs an hour, a majority of it.
Right.
You know, Radio Disney at the time was doing 13 songs an hour.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea that there was this teenager out there who had used radio as his main vehicle, which it is mine and will always be, you know, that was interesting to them, and it was backed up by some proof. Not crazy. It wasn't like kids were coming up to me on the street.
But there was nobody in the marketplace
doing it.
And the it is a teen himself talking to his peers in terms of age,
yeah,
and really having a long form interview with them.
That's it. And even in a radio show format, like I would, my life in high school, mm-hmm, every day was emails on my BlackBerry at the time, or writing notes, but the teachers would think I was taking notes on class. But what I would really be doing is observing everybody around me. I would take notes on everything that I acquired, and I would come in every day, flatten out my paper on my desk, and that was the radio show.
But you were observing what was going on in the class?
Yeah, the teachers, the kids, how they would react. Back,
and then what were you doing with that information?
I would turn it into like topics and discussions and things.
There was a kid in class and he didn't like whatever.
The teacher farted in class today. And how did she save herself? She used this, and this excuse. And I'd come in with that story. Or like, I mean, I wish I had saved those notes. That's one of my biggest regrets so far throughout this journey, is that I haven't saved those things.
Mm.
But there's some photos of them. But I got to listen to the show and I would be able to connect the dots.
Right.
But yeah, I would observe everything that would go on in high school and I would do the show based on reality. And you know what? My reality as a 15-year-old kid just trying to find my way in this high school of 1,800 people was something that people could relate to. Everything from school to relationships. Like, I used to do things on the air where I would allow my audience to text girls for me. Like that's how I would build relationships. It was
so
really,
they would call in and you would say this. How would you give them the number?
I would be talking to a girl on my cell phone and I'd say, I met this girl, you know, there's this girl that I'm in TV class with. Her name is Kayla Grogan. This is the one example that just sticks out in my mind. And I don't know what to say. I'm uncomfortable. I'm terribly uncomfortable.
This is you on the radio.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Uncomfortable with women. I have no idea what to do. What do I say to her? You lead the way. And then phone lines would light up and they would lead the conversation. So the conversation was happening on the radio in real time.
You should say this to her. You should say that to her.
Yes.
You should say this to her.
And I wasn't responding. It was all of the audience. I didn't get a date. She found out the next
day. Wait, what do you mean you weren't responding? They would call in and they'd say, you should say this.
Yeah, I was the one responding to Kayla, but the audience was really the one speaking for me.
Right.
Trying to get me that date.
But would you use any of theirs in an actual text?
Yeah, I used all of it. That's how the conversation went.
Oh.
Through and through. It was genuine. It wasn't my text going through to her. It was the audience's text going through.
Right. And they came from your phone, but yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it would be a through line through the 3-hour show.
Wow, that's great.
You know,
it
would be periodic check-ins. I also remember my Italian teacher got me in trouble. There's two stories in high school because it was weird living a double life, you know, like having the radio show at night and then doing high school during the day.
Like, I did the same thing. I was a lawyer and I started getting into comedy. I wrote jokes. I sold some jokes to Leno, and I was living a secret double life.
But it's hard.
And I did the same thing. I would be in meetings, and I was supposed to be taking notes on what was going on. It was very important, you know, meetings. And I was observing and taking notes and then going back and writing jokes about it and completely, like, disregarding my responsibilities as a lawyer. Exact same thing.
For you, it was a different version of you, right? Like, you know, you at the law office shut off at a certain point, and then it was like comedy you.
Yeah, right.
Everything was different.
Right. Which I didn't know until that time that there was that other part of me, but yeah.
But
there was that part of you too, right?
Yeah.
Although it sounds like the you on radio didn't shut off, and that was such your focus that it was driving all of your activities off air.
Yeah, it was doing everything. You know, the only real extracurricular that I was able to really manage, I did the theater department. I was the lighting guy and crew for a little bit. Had to give that up, but I was the TV club president, sophomore to senior year.
Mm.
That was
I could see that, and I don't mean this as an insult, but you're thoughtful, creative. Like you're very bright.
Thank you.
But combined with creativity and very quick.
Thanks.
And it seems like doing lighting would be, nothing against people who do lighting, but you have more to offer.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I thought so.
I could see you parking cars. That would be the other thing. Those two things, nothing more.
I've actually been dreaming of parking cars my entire life.
Well, you'd meet people. It'd be interesting to have a conversation with them.
That's my favorite. I was working at a grocery store when it really hit me. Like the first thought of like, you know what, asshole, you need to be building a radio show. I was working at the grocery store at Food Town, and I loved talking to the customers. Mm. It was like I would bag their groceries.
And which is rare. Usually it's like, you're on paper, plastic, and nobody ever talks to you.
Yeah. Nothing. And it's a miserable experience.
And you're talking to people like
Everybody.
Twice your age.
Moms, old people,
I did the
young
same
kids.
Thing growing up in this furniture store. My mom would make me sell furniture, and I had to converse with people 60, 70 years old. And people asked me, like, well, you know, why are you so comfortable talking and interviewing? I said, I think because I had to figure out how to connect with somebody to get them to buy a sofa who was three times my age.
See, that's a nurture thing. You know, a lot of people are like, oh, you were born to do this.
Yeah.
Nobody was born to do this. This is acquired because you're just thrown out there into situations.
Charlie Rose says the same thing. You know, Charlie Rose said, I used to think that these people who achieve great things in their profession, whether it's Michael Jordan or Steve Jobs or whatever, it was just they were sort of gifted with some talent that nobody else has. But as I've done these interviews over the years, I realize, yes, they all have a base talent that's significant. But the difference between them and others in their industry is that they worked really hard and had more experience at their thing.
Yes.
And that, it's. I think that's
spot
exactly,
on.
Yeah.
It's spot on.
Yeah.
Because like you don't, you know, you don't just come out of your mom's womb ready to hold conversations you know, do comedy, right?
Yeah.
You're put into situations where you need to adapt, right?
So
you
you're
need
to and you're chit-chatting with these older people and you realize you have a gift for gab, right?
And I'm forcing them to let me carry their bags out to their car because I just wanted to keep talking to them. And that's how I really realized that I wanted to do radio because, you know, curiosity and conversation, this is what drives this medium.
Yeah.
You know, more than anything. And then I was able to match that with my love for music.
Yeah, and you can't fake it. Audiences know if you're just walking through it.
Yeah.
And that, or if you're really in the moment listening and reacting.
They know when you're miserable. They know when you're sad. Mm. Everything can be determined by voice.
Did you have close friends?
Not really.
Was the radio a way for you to connect with people because maybe you were uncomfortable one-on-one with people?
Definitely. Definitely. Because, you know, it wasn't...
Socially awkward?
I was socially awkward in bigger settings. I had maybe two friends, three friends that were really... But only really
good
became
friends?
My friends through radio. Like, radio was that driving vehicle.
Mm.
Like, I had made, finally, after a year and a half in high school, no friends. Zero. I had made...
Really?
Yeah, it was...
So what was
sucked.
It? And look, it's a two-way street. You know what I mean? Like, I know high school can be tough. We all lived it. They're not... Nice kids, they're nice kids, but you would have to own some of it too. So what were you not doing, and what were they not doing that you never connected with anybody?
I didn't have the ability to go out and be like too extracurricular. I wasn't a sports guy or anything like that. Even though I had tried to play every sport under the sun to make my dad happy, but whatever, that didn't matter.
Mm.
I didn't have that as like a common ground with anybody, and I had come from the Catholic school of 80 kids into a school of 1,800, 2,000.
Yeah, that's overwhelming.
It was a different world.
This is high school, ninth grade on.
Yes.
You did the switch.
And the high school was made up of kids who had gone to middle school together their entire existence.
Oh, they had a relationship.
Yeah, from elementary school all the way to high school, they
had
been
there. And
you
couldn't stay at the Catholic school because of money. It was too tough for your
money, mom. And to be honest, I didn't get accepted into the one Catholic high school that was a funnel from my elementary school into the high school.
Oh, okay.
The principal of my high school had told them not to accept me. I was the first person in well over a decade that the high school hadn't accepted from my elementary
school.
Why
did they tell them that?
They didn't like me. They didn't like my family. They didn't like anything about us. It was bad.
Because you weren't paying your bills?
Well, it was a company. Even at that moment, the bills had been taken care of. They just didn't want anything to do with me and who I am and my family. And the ironic thing is now they all try to reach out. Now I've been asked for donations.
Yeah.
So like it's a really crappy full circle.
Yeah.
You know.
But do you think it was that you were just sort of, and I don't mean this in a pejorative way, odd in their eyes, you know, because
yes.
I understand how they think. I grew up with that, but it's like they sort of have a very narrow view of how people should act, behave, and think.
I was so unique.
Yes.
That they didn't know what to do with me.
Right.
And I was too much. There was too much personality. There was too much energy.
Yes, you get the ADHD thing going, and like,
it was
a shitty
mixture.
Yeah.
And it was teachers who are older, who don't get paid a lot,
yeah,
who didn't want to deal with it, who just really
so
had
they're
enough.
So they're in the break room saying, oh, that kid's a pain in the ass.
I was the kid, and I was the family that everybody talked crap on in that school.
Wow.
From even some of the parents.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, it was really a rough one.
Yeah, so you go from there to this big high school, and part of it was the size of it and just feeling overwhelmed, plus all these kids had relationships going back.
Yeah, and I'd worn a uniform since I could remember.
Yeah.
And the idea that now I had to buy clothes and had to build an identity, and I'm like going into this new place and I don't even know what to wear. And like all of these things just added up and it was just so overwhelming.
But here's what it was, your mom's a psychologist, right?
Well, social worker. So,
but don't you, but you have to be a trained, you have to have a psychology degree?
I think she has one to a certain extent, or she has whatever is, whatever the baseline of a psychology degree.
So she's not, she wouldn't be called a therapist.
No.
Oh, okay. All right.
She'd be called a counselor.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Because I was going to say, like, sort of, you know, the cobbler doesn't fix his own shoes. Like, if she's working in terms of mental health with people, couldn't she sort of help you with some of these issues?
And I think she tried.
Yeah.
But I also think that, like, it was also so overwhelming to have two kids, to have a job that really was as stressful as anything from 7 a.m. to 6 o'clock at night. It was just like, it was like the perfect shitstorm.
Yeah.
And me not wanting to do, you know, do homework and going to doctors to work on my ADHD and all this shit. Mm. It was just, oh, it was like, I remember hearing my mom cry. It was so difficult. You know, it was a rough one.
Yeah. And so in high school, it was just tough for you to connect. So it was a sort of this like, you know, hey, I'm going to just be a loner a bit.
I'm going to fly on the wall and figure it out.
Yeah.
And eventually I kind of figured it out.
Yeah.
And I didn't end high school on a bad note by any means.
That's great.
You know, and from high school, I decided to like dedicate some time to radio.
Yeah.
And in typical radio fashion, the second I did that, I ended school in June. I had already decided to hold off on college for a year. In July, I got fired from my radio job. And I tried to...
Why did you get fired?
Well, the company folded.
Yeah,
you know?
They tend to... That happens a lot.
Yeah. And it was just... It was time.
Yeah.
Like, it was time for us to move on from this chapter and try again. And I was discouraged. And I decided to try to go back to school. I was able to do that. I ended up getting a job at Nickelodeon. So I was the guy...
In New York?
Yeah, based in New York. Mm. I was a guy at Nickelodeon who did the orange carpets for Kids' Choice Awards and all of their tentpole events. And then I had like a little show where we did
stuff. When you say did them, you were on air?
I do all the pre-shows and like the...
You went in and auditioned for this?
Well, they had been meeting with me because what I did at my second radio home, I had geared and positioned the radio station that I was running to kind of be what Disney was for Radio Disney. I wanted my station to be that for Nickelodeon. So I had all of, like, it was a very interesting time between 2010 and like 2013 for Nickelodeon as a network.
Mm.
It was, iCarly was at its peak and coming down. Victorious, which was Ariana Grande, Victoria Justice, Liz Gillies, all these people, was one of the biggest shows that the network has ever seen.
Right.
And they needed a vehicle to get the music out, to get the stars out. And I kind of latched onto that. And I had invited all the cast on the show. And
so you became this the sort of an extension, a media extension or arm of the network.
Exactly.
Where they go, let's feed them over to Zach's. And
it was consistent.
So you just made contact. How did you make contact with somebody at Nickelodeon to do that?
I started with personal PR people.
Mm-hmm.
And the people, the Ariana, who had come on. Ariana's still one of my best friends today.
Mm.
I mean, she came on and she had such a great time and then word started to spread.
Yeah.
Just like before, people heard that it was great.
Mm.
And, you know, it's also competitive.
Yeah.
You know, those kids who are on Nickelodeon, if they see their co-star doing it, they need to be doing it.
Yep.
Why am I not on the same show?
Yeah.
Come on over, bro.
Yeah, yeah.
So it all, like, it was it's not timing, you know, but I'm very blessed to have come up in.
Well, you're smart. You got to give yourself credit. You've had a plan and it executed it. And then the radio, Nickelodeon radio relationship turned into an on-camera relationship for you at Nickelodeon.
And they had started. That relationship started by them wanting to start a radio station and them wanting to be on it. But they couldn't hold me until the radio was done. And they tried me out on TV. And I didn't suck that badly at it. Not saying I was great, but like, come on, it was my first camera thing. And I was doing, I remember my first camera gig was Worldwide Day of Play. And that was on the White House front lawn. Like Michelle Obama's behind me. Malia and Sasha are like walking back and forth with their security detail.
Wow.
It was huge.
Wow.
And that was my
first
gig.
Take that, Catholic school.
Yeah, yeah. Eat me, Miss Australia.
Right, you can't deal with me, but Michelle's fine. The first lady likes me. She's let me hang out. You kicked me out of the school, you prick.
She allows me on her front lawn.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was cool. But I didn't go to college. I tried to go to college, and they kicked me out. Second school that didn't like me.
Boy, you're an asshole. Nobody likes you. You're the sweetest guy that I've met in years. I can't believe this.
Thanks.
You have like a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde thing?
Maybe I just don't know it. Maybe that's
how
a real sickness.
How could somebody not like you?
Thank you. You know, I don't know. I went into college and I tried it out and I needed to take 14 days off of school because I needed to go host the Kids' Choice Awards pre-show in LA. And the counselor pulled me into her office and she said, you know what? I think it's time for you to leave. I don't think this school thing is cut out for you. And a part of me was like, you know what? Maybe you're doing the best thing for me.
Well, why did they care? Because college is a business. And if they're getting, listen, it's in the college's best interest for a kid to be lost and meander for 6 or 7 years. You get more money out of them.
Exactly.
Why were they? Why did she care?
I was paying regardless.
Were you being a pain in the ass there to people?
No. Oh, no, no, no. She just thought I couldn't commit. And her, because, and to be honest, there had been a few weeks where I'd had to, like, you know, take off for different shoots and stuff. And she just felt like I wasn't into it, which, to be honest, who's really into the school side of college?
Especially, oh, let's see. I could sit in class and do a psychology thing, or I could go to Los Angeles and do a red carpet event with celebrities. What's the more interesting thing? Right.
Come on. Right? It was a no-brainer for me.
Yeah.
And it was really a blessing in disguise, and that changed my life completely. Because from
she
there—
She did you a favor.
She did.
Yeah.
And but from there, I was able to do my thing at Nickelodeon. They were— I had such a great time for 3 years with them, and they brought me into the office. I got to consult one of the presidents of the network, Russell Hicks, and his team, and it was really cool. I got to learn a lot because I
they would tap you for sort of what does this feel like this would be right, blah, blah, blah.
They wanted the radio type of mindset and the radio communication style that was so direct yet personal.
Yeah,
right. That was something that they needed, down from voiceover to how they wanted to word promos and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah,
and it also, you know, it got to a point, too, where, like, I wasn't— not that I wasn't their go-to host. They really didn't need a host, you know? Once my show kind of went out and Victorious ended and iCarly ended, my friends, it was like a graduating class.
Right.
You know, over the last 4 or 5 years, Victorious had started their show on Nickelodeon. I had started my second real radio show, and we graduated together. It was really cool.
Wow. And then sort of where does that take you? How do you come to LA? You're in New York. You're doing this radio show. How do you end up here?
Okay. After Nickelodeon, I meet a guy. His name is Ron Hartenbaum, and he does independent syndicated radio shows. And he had come to me and said, hey, what do you think about doing an independent syndicated show? I think FM radio could really use a young voice. You've been doing it at digital. You have Nickelodeon now under your belt. Like, I really think this could work.
The Nickelodeon radio you were doing was digital?
I hadn't really done Nickelodeon radio. They just wanted me for radio initially.
But that show that you were— where they were feeding you their stars, was that a digital radio show?
Yes, that was my digital radio show.
A platform that you had
Yes.
Right, and you would tweet it out, and that's how people get to know about it.
That was it.
Right, and they would tweet it out, yeah.
Solely internet.
Right.
Solely internet.
Right.
So I had never done FM radio before, ever.
Mm-hmm.
The guy comes to me and says, I think FM radio could use a young voice. Nobody young is doing it. You want to try it?
That's cool.
I'm in. So we started. I got my old band back together from, you know, my Goom radio, the internet radio show, the second one. Bring them over, and we independently syndicate a show. We do it out of the CBS Broadcast Center for 3 years. Hurdles and all
on
this
57th
crap.
Street and 524.
57th and 10th,
that's
baby.
That's where I shoot my— I do segments for CBS and stuff. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful building.
Yeah.
Anderson Cooper's over there all the time.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
I see him, Scott Pelley,
mm-hmm.
Oprah,
mm-hmm.
Gail King.
I know. It's crazy. I know.
It's great.
So you have a you're 3 years in. And how did you make any adjustments from internet to
FM
radio?
Yeah, we had a lot. We had to.
What were they?
Internet was all content, and I could pick whatever I wanted to play, and I had only 5 songs an hour. It was like whatever the fuck I wanted to do.
Yeah.
That's what we did, and it worked.
Mm.
With this, we need
that's
to—
because your personality's coming out.
Thank you.
Right.
And it's truth, because that really, that's what connects somebody.
Right.
And when you're already on the internet, music is everywhere.
Mm.
You don't come to me. You don't type in my web browser and tune into my radio show for the same old effing songs that you can hear 17 different ways to Sunday.
Mm.
You know, you don't.
Yeah.
You need to come for something more. And
right.
We offered a lot more.
Right.
So we needed to match the more that we offered to the digital audience, but also make it FM friendly. So we combined the both worlds, and we did a great job at it. It took us a while, though.
So, but you had to play more songs.
More
which
songs.
Which cut down your content time.
Yeah, completely.
So what was the content you focused on?
It was the same type of relatable stuff, all reality, all from your real life, but we
I was walking down the street and blah, 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 and this happened. Or I ran into this person and he said this.
Conversation starters based off of moments. Like, you know, it could be anything from I taught a guy what hummus was the other day, you know, to
And you would just rant stream of consciousness?
Yeah, it would be planned. So I'd have an idea, and all the different characters on my show would bring something different to it too. We'd have, you know, co-host breaks and stuff like that. It was a group conversation.
Mm-hmm.
It was really a group of friends hanging out, but we needed to hone it in.
Right.
And instead of having, you know, we couldn't go for 10 minutes, 15 minutes straight. I can only go for, at the time, we're going 2 minutes straight.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Now we go for a minute and 15 seconds straight.
Mm.
So we cut it down even more.
Mm.
It's rough.
Mm.
I've gone from all the talk time and creative flexibility in the world to super focused, super honed in, short, sweet moments.
Do you think that that's cost you listeners, or that that's taking you out of what you do well? What's the downside to that?
FM radio, you need to be able to do both well, right? Because you're not going to be able to have creative freedom and be able to talk for as long as you want. Unless you're really doing a morning show.
Right.
And my show and my talents and what I've done so far equips me to do just that, right? But doing the show at night on all of our radio stations, you know, allows me to focus on another side of this, which is getting the story out in the right way without losing the funny, without losing the entertainment.
Yeah, it's easy to write a long story. It's hard to write a short one.
Exactly.
So you have to trim the fat and get to the point and
That's still
be entertaining.
And now when we can marry the two, when we're given that opportunity, we'll be able to do it better than a lot of other people out there because it goes back to experience, right?
Right.
And, you know, it's not nature, but it's nurture and the things around you.
Yeah. And when you're at CBS, you're working out of CBS and doing this independent syndication for 3 years and then come to LA to do Westwood One, or what pulled you here?
Okay. We were doing it independently and Westwood One was a partner. They didn't own the show.
Mm-hmm.
They only did ad sales and they had to give us a studio space.
Right.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
They decide, we're at a point in the show's life where we're at like 25, 26 radio stations, and there's not much more for us to grow independently because most of the pop radio stations are owned by big companies.
Yeah.
And we realize we can't do this on our own anymore.
Right.
We're at a point where we need to grow. Westwood One is, we're already there. They made the offer to buy the show.
Right.
They purchased my show. And a part of that deal was to move us here to Los Angeles because we needed more studio space.
Right.
They just didn't have the space in New York.
Right.
And yeah, we've been based here in LA since 2015, and Westwood One has officially owned the show since 2015.
And you're doing, you're like, when I came on, you've got your crowd, your group, your buddies, your co-hosts.
Yeah.
But then you're also doing, you know, you had interviewed Justin Bieber and Miley Cyrus and sort of, you're still doing those kind of interviews. How it's easier to get them now because now you've got an FM nationally syndicated show.
It's much easier.
And they're coming to you with the big names and not the small names.
They ask.
Yeah.
When Lady Gaga wants to come by, she sends an email and they go, can we bring Lady Gaga by at this time and this date?
Yeah.
We go, yes. And they go, okay, we'll come by, you know, a day before and do a security run through and then we're good to go. But yeah, I mean, we do.
And what do these publicists recognize in your show? Why do they think that this is a show where they should bring Lady Gaga to? What your demo is? What
know.
Your demo was? I don't mean that in a negative
way. Don't know.
Your demo was what? 18 to 35?
Really, like 30. If you want to like go like nitty gritty with it of who really likes us and who is our P1, who's coming up and talking to me on the street, it's 13 to 28. That's like our core.
What are you saying that relates to a 13-year-old at 23?
We're talking about. Age with the internet today, interests are on an equal playing field. Do you know what I mean?
Because everybody's exposed to everything.
Yes.
Right.
Everybody has that person they're a fan of. Everybody has that musician that they love. Everybody has that YouTube influencer
but
that they want to learn more about.
But if you're talking about someone who's a fan at 23 of somebody and the 13-year-old isn't, or vice versa.
Well, that's it.
Then you're going to lose. Okay, let's talk about the 13-year-old who loves somebody on the Disney Channel.
Yes.
That I'm 23. I ain't sticking around for that conversation.
You're right. And you know what? That's why the FM radio show doesn't feature a ton of our interviews, right? Because, you know, a fan of Iggy Azalea isn't going to be a fan of Ariana, and a fan of Ariana Grande isn't going to be a fan of Nick Jonas, and a fan of Nick Jonas ain't going to be a fan of YouTuber Casper Lee.
So, but where does that interview end up then?
YouTube. Our interviews do well digitally. And depending on the interview, we can make headlines with it. So like
then drives people to the radio station.
Yes. Well, sometimes it really drives them to our digital property first.
Mm.
You know, like Ed Sheeran was just on and he told a story about Eminem and Kendrick Lamar and how Eminem tested Kendrick when they went into the studio, and That interview blew up in the hip-hop community. So mm-hmm. that's like, that takes on a life of its own.
Right.
Then we can do an interview with...
And you shoot those YouTube videos here?
Yeah, all in our studio down the hall.
You just kind of have a camera and you're right.
We have a guy who does it. And just because the interviews are long, they're like podcasts. So like, you know, the thing is like, depending on... Every time somebody comes up to me, they call it something different, right? Your radio show, your interviews, your video podcasts, your podcasts, they're like podcast length. So they're like 35-minute, 40-minute in-depth interviews.
Right.
And artists love doing them because when they go to radio station after radio station after radio station, they ask the same fucking question.
Oh, I get that all the time on mine. They like Bryan Cranston said it, Kristen Chenoweth, Sugar Ray Leonard, anybody like... Boy, this is great. I've never talked about this stuff in an interview before. You don't ask the same questions.
That's what you want.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's why you do the research so that you know, I have a rule. Like if I see a question asked a couple of times, I won't ask the question because the poor bastard had to, you know, especially who's someone who's on a tour promoting a movie or a book or something. It's like, you know, that poor person's answered the same question, you know, and like I scream at the TV when I see somebody interviewing. So what was it like to kiss Russell Crowe? And I want to fucking reach to the screen and choke the person asking the question.
There's so many things.
And it's not an excuse to say I only had 7 minutes. You can ask a very probing question and get a lot of information in 7 minutes.
If you know that ahead of time and you can prep for a 7-minute interview like that, you can do a great job.
Absolutely.
And then do you play clips
of those interviews on your show?
And we drive to YouTube.
Yeah. So you're really using all of the platforms.
Everything's connected, even from Snapchat to Facebook to Twitter and the radio show. And that's something that a mindset that we bring to the table because my show is young. You know, we have the youngest radio show in the country, pretty much.
So you on Snapchat, like for an example, what will you do to promote yourself? What will you say? What is it?
It could be anything from like, you know, throwing food into one of my co-host's mouths to like filming a video. It doesn't matter. It could be anything.
Right.
Nothing is off the table, and entertaining is entertaining. You
right.
know?
So you'll make these little Snapchats and bang, put them out and
use it to promote the show. We take behind the scenes videos or pictures of all the guests.
It'll just be a little text or something.
And it's a great communication tool. Like a lot of people like will reach out to us during the radio show and I'll like text them via Snapchat.
You think it's a better communication tool than Twitter?
Yeah, at this point.
Why?
I think Twitter is getting really political. It's an older base of users, so it's just it's a little bit more depressing.
Yeah.
And Snapchat is purely visual with like a personal component that is easy to access.
Yeah.
So you can go from public to personal, and like the idea that like it's a video on their phone and it's like close to their face, it's a whole personal thing.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like somebody's Snapchat handle is more private than somebody's Twitter handle.
Because you feel like you're really connecting with somebody because of the video component or the picture component.
And you also don't, like, with Twitter, an unknown person can tweet something and it can go viral.
Right.
With Snapchat, you know exactly who it's going to. You know who's seeing it. You know who's viewing it.
And then
it.
It's going to disappear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a little different.
And you do stories?
We do. The My Stories are very heavy for us.
Yeah.
But there's the whole argument of, do you produce heavy on the My Stories or even like the Instagram stories? Do you produce them? Do you keep them rogue and dirty because that's relatable? The debates can go on for freaking
days. Yeah, absolutely. So are you, how are you different now than when you were 9 years ago when you were starting? Obviously, you're more seasoned.
Everything.
But what are some of the big, I mean, where do you feel you made the turn that you felt like you had to make to really be able to do this at this level?
It was a combination of being comfortable behind the microphone.
Yeah.
Being just the right amount of comfortable with myself to own it, right? And to embrace it, but not totally comfortable.
Which is tough because you sound like you've been an awkward teen, an awkward kid.
And a lot of me is uncomfortable with myself.
Yeah.
I don't look at myself naked. I'm a 23-year-old virgin. There's like layers to this.
That's weird because I look at you naked.
I
have cameras trained on your apartment.
Wow.
And you know, you're missing out.
Is that why you're so thin?
Yeah, I can't eat. I throw up for days.
You just vomit.
Oh, I just saw Zach naked. I can't eat for days.
But yeah, I was the right amount of comfortable with myself to embrace it.
Do you talk about your virginity?
Yeah, yeah. I love it. And I'm also like, I won't tell you if I'm gay, straight, bi, trans, pan, don't matter, because I'm unisex. So I will divulge everything about my personal life and my relationship life, but you'll never know if it's a guy or a girl on the other end, at least for now.
Mm-hmm. Why is that?
One, I don't need to.
You worried about alienating, have 50% of your audience if you say you're gay?
I don't want to alienate. It's not alienation. I'm very proud of whoever I am, whether it be hetero or homo, don't matter, or pan. But I want to, it's not that I'm proving a point. It's just what I think the right move is to appeal to everybody at this very moment, all while teaching them something very, very important.
What?
It doesn't matter who the fuck is on the other side sleeping next to you. Your trials and tribulations, your issues, your experiences are all the same. Whether you're gay, straight, pan, bi, it doesn't matter. Yeah. Love is love. Relationship is relationship.
Yeah.
You go on the exact same journeys.
Yeah, I say the same thing in stand-up. Whenever I talk to somebody in the audience, it happened last night at the Hollywood Improv. There were two guys sitting together, and they looked gay.
Yeah.
I said, and I just blurted out, you guys are gay? And everybody said, everybody's like that. And they go, yeah. I go, what's the big deal? You can make judgments about people on first blush, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Exactly.
If I was wrong, they'd say no. And I go, how long have you been going out? And they're like, 2 years. And you could feel everybody get like, and I turn to them, I go, I'm going to talk to them the same way I would talk to you two. And I pointed to a heterosexual couple. Christ. There is no difference. I'd ask them all the same questions. How long have you been going out? 2 years. Are you living together? No. Why not? Well, we were in relationships before. They just happen to like dick. That's all. And so the minute you start treating them differently, the same thing with handicapped people. If I see somebody in a wheelchair, I'll immediately talk to them. Because I know part of that, I feel, is my job as a human being to talk to them, because most people turn away because they're uncomfortable talking to people in a wheelchair. They don't know how to deal with it. And they're just, that person in the wheelchair doesn't look at themselves. They still see themselves as that young, vibrant 17-year-old kid running around who had no problems. Now they have cerebral palsy or they've got MS. And I say this all the time to audiences. When you react that way to me talking to these people, you're being racist or you're being a homophobic.
Discriminatory,
discriminatory.
Spot on.
Instead of like, oh no, they're kind of broken, don't talk to them. No, fuck that.
They're all the same, dude.
And I got into this long thing with the guy. Good. I said, are you living together? I said, are you married? No, are you living together? And the guy goes, well, why do you have to be living together if you're not married? Something, he said something funny. And we got into this back and forth. This is one of the gay guys. And he was totally open about it.
But why do you think people around him react the way that they do?
Because I think that it's a combination of, a big thing is a very PC environment we live in. Mm-hmm. Comedy and stand-up comedy is known in particular to push boundaries of being not PC.
Always.
And I think that people want to sort of not deal with things that they're not comfortable with. And I don't think a lot of people are still 100% comfortable with gay people and the idea of homosexuality. Mm-hmm. So it's the same thing with handicapped people. It's like, or somebody who's mentally challenged. It's like, out of sight, out of mind. I'm just going to look the other way. And I know, because I live in New York and I have homeless people around me all the time. And most of the time I'll give them money and try to help them. Sometimes if I don't feel the person's legit, I won't. But like, I think a big component is the PC and just the uncomfortability with things that are different than what they've lived. I don't know what your thoughts are.
No, but you've done a lot of good. Like educating somebody and having that moment last night at the improv, like that's a big deal.
I had a thing. I was at a club in Connecticut, big club, and I looked to my left and there's a guy in a wheelchair, looks like MS, like he's got a tube to breathe and he's with his buddies. Mm-hmm. But in my mind, I just see four guys out having beers
drinks
and some laughs. One of them happens to be, in tough shape. So I go, I go to the guy in the wheelchair, and he's got like a big shawl on. I go, what's going on? He goes, nothing. He goes, out for a night? Yeah. How long you guys known each other? Oh, a long time, blah, blah, blah. And then I said to the guy, so what do you got? And the priest went, I go, what? The guy's in a fucking wheelchair. I want to know. What do you got, MS? Cerebral palsy? I go, I got MS. I go, I've always wondered, can you still get a hard on when you have MS? And the place went, oh, and the guy went, fuck yeah. And I knew I had him.
That's awesome.
Because that's how you talk to the guy. Because I'm going to ask, I'm like you, I have endless curiosity. Yeah. If I don't know something, as long as I'm not inappropriate, I'm going to ask it. And I think it's our jobs, whether it's doing through a comedy stage or a radio show or a podcast, to ask the thing that everybody else wants to ask but is afraid to ask.
Everybody's thinking it.
Right. So then it goes from this to this real quick. And I go, you want to do, we start talking. I go, dude, you're cool. You want to do a shot? Can you drink? He goes, yeah. So I got him a shot of
That's
Jack.
That's great.
So I go, look, now don't be spilling the shot down your fucking air hole and shit. This is costing me money. I don't get these for free. We do a shot, place is laughing. And then I look at his shawl and I'm like, shawl has a hole in it like the size of a baseball. And I'm like, what's going on with your shawl? He goes, what? I go, there's like a hole in it. He goes, yeah. I go, let me guess, the front wheels of your wheelchair got caught in the shawl and it caused a rip. He goes, how did you know that? And I went to his friends. I go, you cheap fucks. I go, there's literally a TJ Maxx across the street. You can't buy this guy a $50 shawl. So there's a guy in front and I go, take off your boot. He goes, what? I go, take off. You had a cowboy boot. And I go, take your cowboy boot. And I took his cowboy boot and I walked around the room and I made people put money in the cowboy boot.
Awesome.
And I dumped it on his lap. This guy
great.
Has come to see me. Every time I come into town, he bought everything I sell, like CDs and whatever. And that I'm proud of that moment only because I feel like, especially when you're that bad off, like he's rough, he was at a rough stage of MS, you get forgotten.
And in that moment, you made him feel like it was 15 years ago and there wasn't a tube coming out of his freaking neck.
Right, right. And I, you know, I understand now because it's funny when you initially just said, well, I keep that vague. I'm like, well, that's not really true to you, who you are and like in terms of being open about things. But then I get it because when you start defining yourself in those ways, it does color the conversation with people.
It does. And I don't want anybody to feel like they don't feel comfortable having their kids listen or any of this. Because you know what? I genuinely believe that my radio show, being as young as we are, we have a duty. We have a duty when we have a job.
What do you think that is?
To make sure that the next generation comes in and is ushered in the right way with the right mindset and the right knowledge.
And what is that mindset?
Homophobia is going to be gone.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Islamophobia, going to be gone.
Yeah.
Racism will be gone eventually.
Yeah.
It's going to take, let's give it half a generation.
Yeah.
But Generation Z, the younger side of millennials, they think differently. And it goes back to the nature versus nurture conversation, right? Like a year ago, one of my co-hosts was open. She was gay, and she's been on the radio. She was on the radio with us for well over a year, all while I was doing, you know, giving my life and keeping it unisex. And you got to think about what is happening in your car when the radio's on, and what the radio stations that I'm on, like WABD in Mobile, Alabama, or KRBE in Houston, Texas, or any of these stations that are heritage radio stations in the market, what it means to have a 20-something gay woman coming through your speakers on a radio station that's been on the preset in your minivan for the last 15 years. Mm. Or when I crack the mic and we talk about, you know, me keeping it gender neutral, and when somebody calls in, when we get calls off of it, you'll hear on the air, one girl assumes it's a girl, the other person will assume it's a guy. You'll never know.
Mm.
Those things matter, right? Because that's being hit into the ears of, like, you know, everybody between the under the age of 22 in Birmingham, Alabama.
You think somebody who's lived a cloistered traditional existence a la Catholic, for example, hearing a lesbian in Los Angeles talk about issues, it opens the mind and it's healthy because you're seeing, oh, those people aren't that much different from me.
Yes.
The only thing that's different is their sexual preference, but otherwise, you know, they eat breakfast, they get in fights, they don't get along with their mom, whatever it is.
They live life just like me.
And that makes us a more harmonious society.
People are understanding it for the first time in a long time. And there's a lot of people in the communities that we serve who are gay and never had that voice.
Right.
And we finally gave them a voice. So,
right.
Yeah, we were educating one group of society that didn't know.
Right.
All while giving the society that is a part of the LGBTQ community an actual voice for the first time ever.
Yeah.
And nobody knows we're in LA, really. People either...
Do you keep that on the down low?
It's all on the down low.
Why?
But just because, you know, radio is very local right now.
Yeah.
And we do a show that is a local national hybrid. So you can hear me.
Well, Bob and Tom is the same way. And
yes.
When you go on, and they're good friends of mine, I do the show a lot.
Love them.
The only rule is don't mention where the show is based out of.
That's
literally
it.
Because there's a local component, because I think that they want to have everyone feel included, and geography can exclude people.
Spot on.
Psychologically.
Yes. Not necessarily in what's actually coming through the speakers.
Right.
It's just the idea that, oh, I'm there in Indianapolis, right? Because that's where they are.
Right.
But I'm hearing them in you know, Fargo.
Right. Well, if you hear an opinion that sort of feels borderline conservative and you know it's coming out of a conservative part of the country.
Judgment
that it's conservative. Whereas if you're not sure where it's coming from, I think the mind will sort of take it in a little bit more and consider it as possibly a valid point.
Yes.
And not just a, like, you know, this is the other side of the way I think, so I'm not going to listen, which is a big problem.
Huge.
And you must be, Trump must be giving you a lot of conversation about these issues, right? And do
yes.
you use that as a sort of an open
yes
way
and
to,
no.
to go into issues of Islamophobia and race and everything else?
We have moments. There's moments.
Because I think young people are more politically sort of than ever before.
Yeah.
I mean, well, maybe going back to the 60s before this, but I think they're very heightened to this right
huge
now.
Resurgence. You know, it started with Bernie Sanders. I think he had a really big
yeah,
part of
true.
It, right? He really did. He changed what politics means to my peers forever,
yeah.
right? And I really, what he's done will have a lasting impact on our country forever.
One of the arguments against Bernie, and I think it's important, even though if somebody believes in somebody, they hear the other side, the good and the bad.
Go.
Is the everything can be great for everybody all the time, sort of, you know, free university, free healthcare, this and that. And when you're young, it seems great and fair and nice. And some make the argument that it's not realistic, it's tough to pay for. So how do you square that? Do you agree with it?
I don't. Okay. I agree that we as a society have a right to, like, give everybody an equal start.
Yeah.
Right? You know, we do. And why are we allowing our next generation of Americans to get all, to start at a disadvantage rather than at an advantage?
Right.
The idea that kids leave college hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt,
right.
going into jobs that start them at a salary of $35,000 a year,
yeah.
is absolutely bonkers.
Yeah.
Bonkers.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Universal health care. The argument can consistently be made that there's great countries, really successful countries all over the world doing it for all those people. And I understand America.
Yeah,
you know,
my brother-in-law lives in Denmark. They have it.
And he loves it, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Come on.
Nothing
is going to be great for everybody, always. But we have, it should
in
be
the overall, everyone's, a lot more people are better off under that scenario. And I agree
with
you.
It should be in our DNA to give everybody the best possible
right.
care.
And I agree with that. I'm just putting the other side, you hear that other argument.
Of course.
You know?
But you know, the argument too is like Bernie Sanders' plan was, you know, the average family was only going to get paid, taxed $5,000 more. The average family of $5,000 more. But in return, they would have, you know, no health care costs
yeah.
at all.
Save that in deductibles alone.
Well,
yeah.
that's exactly
right.
it. And nobody saw it that way.
Right.
Right? You're trading one for another and you're actually saving money and you're going to get better health care. So the idea that one, you don't have to pay, you don't have deductibles, but we do need a part of your taxes so everybody can be a part of it.
Yeah.
That's for the health care side of it. When it comes to college, dude, the banks deserve something here. The banks and I hate sounding like that guy, but the banks and Wall Street, they owe somebody something here because they've taken advantage
yeah.
of a majority of Americans,
yeah.
all of Americans except for the 1% for way too long.
Right.
Way too
yeah,
long.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Fannie Mae can really go fuck herself. Seriously, because she's fucked over dozens of my peers.
Yeah.
Dozens of my friends that I know personally.
Yeah.
I had a guy working for me here who is only making, you know, whatever it is, 40 grand a year, but paying out $1,000 a month. $1,000 a month to Fannie Mae.
Yeah.
How is that fair?
Yeah.
He's walking out of college.
Because it's a business. I mean,
that's it.
It's a business. I got a buddy that was in a tuition management budgeting system. He started a company, and it's a numbers game. It's a business, and all these colleges are competing with each other. It's not what we think school is or should be.
And how is that right?
It's not. It's well, but the problem is it's a function of a capitalist society that we live in that's really obsessed with wealth and power and all of that other stuff.
But who is obsessed with wealth and power? The majority of the Americans or the minority that just, you know, happen to be a little bit smarter than the other guy
right.
to take advantage of
right.
them?
Right. Now, you said you don't talk about a lot of these things on your show because you keep it more sort of a pop
yeah.
culture, celebrity-based.
Pop culture, reality-based stuff. Mm. There's moments
like
where
reality
we
show stuff. You talk about
yeah.
that. Yeah,
like our lives
more
and the universe.
Yeah.
Entertaining.
Oh, but you also talk about like, yeah. I mean, I've heard, listen, I know the show, but I want people to go and
of
hear
course.
It, and I want people to know what they're getting.
Sorry, I'm bad at like educating people.
No. But you'll talk about life experiences. And you'll sprinkle in, you know, some pop culture stuff or,
yes.
you know, what happened at the Grammys or whatever.
It's like your favorite morning show, but much better at night. That's like the best way to describe
without
it to anybody.
Slide whistles and
yeah, no
wacky
whistles, that bullshit. You know,
cowbells.
Good morning, everybody. How you doing?
You're not doing weather and traffic on the eights.
Coming up, 2 minutes weather right now. 72 degrees outside.
You're, not reading like a funny story of a woman that like found a rat in her ass, and then like, boy, you had a rat in her ass, and then you rant for 6 minutes about a rat in the ass.
You know what? I could do 17 minutes on a rat's in the ass.
If you can't, then you got to get out of the communication business.
It's on me.
Oh, God. So tell people, you're on the Heritage, you said syndicated through...
We're syndicated through Cumulus Westwood One. We're family members.
Right, but you mentioned Heritage before, but
We're on Heritage radio stations across the country. So we're on 75 stations all across the nation, seriously, from San Luis Obispo in Plymouth, Oregon, all the way east to Keene, New Hampshire. Well, we're in all the cities that you tour.
Okay. If it's 5,000 or below, I'm there. No.
I'm like Detroit or Flint, Michigan, you're Houston,
just
Kansas
where
City.
All the people live. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you do Kansas City?
Yeah.
I love it. Which club do you play in Kansas City?
I've done both Kansas City Improv and Stanford and Sons.
Cool. Yeah. The Improv is the one that's attached to the big mall.
Yes.
It's really grandiose.
Yeah. It's, these improvs are getting bigger and bigger. They're turning into mini theaters. They're building them bigger and bigger.
You want though, right?
Yeah. I mean, to a certain extent, you gotta, comedy's good in small settings, in my opinion, intimate, low ceilings. But yeah,
I understand that. Yeah. Because it's more of a conversation.
Well, it's a spoken word. It's why there's a spotlight on you and it's dark, because if you miss one syllable of my setup, you're not going to get the joke. So whereas music, you can have things going on and the music still kind of resonates with you and you can be talking to your buddy.
You need it all.
But this, you need to be, focused in on the performer, much like radio. Yeah. Like if they're sort of not sort of hanging on your every word, that part of that conversation doesn't mean anything to them.
Exactly.
In the way you would like it to.
That's
my
problem.
So we're going to do another one of these soon, because I just want to talk to you about other things going on in life and entertainment and stuff. This is, you're such a great guy.
Thank you.
You're a sweet guy. I think that you're wise way beyond your years.
And
you're intelligent, obviously, but I think you're just a really just very unique individual, and you're someone who's a pain in the ass. I don't really care having you around. I want you out of this studio, you little prick, you.
I get it.
And why doesn't your mother pay your fucking bills? And don't even get me started with that. No.
That's on her.
That's on her. So Zach Sang show all over the country. Go listen to it. If you're not, you're not American. And
yes.
And Twitter, all that stuff. What do you got?
At Zach Sang One, Zach Sang on Instagram, Zach Sang on Facebook. And if you shoot me a tweet, I'll follow you back, or hit me on Instagram, I'll follow you back.
All right.
Make it a relationship. Paul Mercurio, you're a really great man, and I thank you for coming to do my show too.
Absolutely. But I do want to do another one of these. And when I come back and I'm in town, I'd love to jump on the show in person. It'd be even more fun. Yeah.
Please. And can we come and see one of your stand up shows?
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll love that.
Just don't embarrass me. How you are in public.
Don't worry, I won't bring the sign. I will bring my seat cushion, right.
Bring a guy and a girl so we're not sure if you're...
That's really... Just holding hands with both?
Yeah, exactly. Zach is really good at keeping this thing down the down low. That's so funny. And send this link around especially, because this is a special guy who is going to be a very, very big and powerful man in radio, or homeless. One of the two.
Only one of the two. There's no third.
You got to eat lunch. You're getting skinny.
It's time.
All right. Thanks, Zach.
That was Zach Sang. How great is that kid? Unbelievable. 14 years old. Just a great kid guy. I'm calling him a kid. Awesome show. Hope you enjoyed the conversation with him. I just loved how open and honest he was about everything. Please, tour dates. PaulMercurio.com, my website. You can see where I'm going to be March 2nd to the 4th this weekend. I'm going to be at the Punchline in Philly March 9th to the 11th. I'm going to be in Nyack, New York at Levity Live. That's just outside of New York City. Levity Live March 9th to the 11th in Nyack, New York. And March 23rd to the 26th, Edmonton, Canada at the Comic Strip. It's in the Giant Mall, biggest mall in the world. And March 29th to April 1st at the Punchline in San Francisco, a great, great, great venue. Thanks for checking out the podcast. Please go give it a review and tell your friends to do so as well. And I will see you guys next week.
A Westwood One podcast production.